Welcome to the Veterans Perspective, presented by the Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency, with your host, Director of the MVAA, Zanetta Adams.
Welcome back to the Veterans Perspective. We are celebrating Women's History Month. And to kick us off this week, we are going to be talking about women in history and women veterans in general. So joining us today will be Erica Hoover, the Women Veterans and Special Populations Coordinator at the Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency. I will be speaking today as well. I think there's an interview portion for me, as well as Pazella Paz Bonner of Homes for Heroic Veterans here in Michigan. So, you know, we have an exciting show. I'm really excited to talk about some of the women who have made history and changed our trajectory of how we serve in the military. And so I ask that you stick around. And as always, you can always call us at 1-800-MICHVET if you have any questions or need connectivity to benefits. So stick around. We'll be right back on the Veterans Perspective. Welcome back to the Veterans Perspective. We are talking about Women's History Month, and that starts on March 1st. And so, you know, I think it's really important to kind of understand the history of Women's History Month as we're talking about women in history. And, you know, this month actually started as Women's History Week in 1980. So this is not something that's been longstanding. I mean, 1980, I mean, I would say that has not been that long ago. If you ask my children, they'd say that was ages ago. But the National Women's History Museums shared that in February 1980, President Jimmy Carter issued the first presidential proclamation declaring the week of March 8th, 1980, as National Women's History Week. And he stated that from the first settlers who came to our shores, from the first American Indian families who befriended them, men and women have worked together to build this nation. Too often the women were unsung and sometimes their contributions went unnoticed. But those achievements, leadership, courage, strength, and love of the women who built America was as vital as that of the men whose names we know so well. You know, there have been changes to women's history over the course of time as we talk about the month. And, you know, many presidents continue to proclaim Women's History Week in March until 1987, when Congress actually passed the law designating the entire month as Women's History Month. And we have some great women in history. We have women who are still living now who have made history. I mean, we just heard about the historical nomination of the Supreme Court Justice Judge Brown for the Supreme Court position as the first African-American woman to serve in that role if she is appointed and selected. But, you know, in 1995, each president began to issue an annual proclamation designating March as Women's History Month as well. So we have such a history and where we came from, but again, it wasn't that long ago. So it's great when we have the opportunity to elevate the issues and the women veterans who have really helped to shape and pave the way for us. So I wanted to talk to you all about some of the things that I hope you're taking advantage of as a woman veteran. And you know, some of the things I'll talk about, it's not just for women veterans, it's for veterans in general, but the stories of women veterans are not necessarily told as much as male veterans. And so we want to make sure those stories are told so we can preserve history. So as we're talking about that, the Library of Congress has this Veterans History Project, and they're looking for firsthand accounts of service from the military community in support of preserving those stories that I talked about and informing generations to come. And so you can submit your story. You can be a part of history. You can be a part of preserving that history so that when people come well after you, we can know, you know, how you served, whether you served on the battlefield or you just served, you know, at Fort Lewis or any of those other forts and made sure that you were support. That's important. Those stories are important. And so you can visit LOC as in Library of Congress .gov/vets, V-E-T. And so that will be a really great thing to do. And any veteran can sign up for that, but they really want more stories of women veterans as well. And if you have a veteran, a woman veteran, or any veteran who has passed away, you can call or you can check them out and tell their story as much as you know, so that we can continue to preserve that. One of the other things that I found really cool was the Women Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C., Arlington. You can actually sign up online to be added to the Women Veterans Memorial. And you can just Google Women Veterans Memorial and the information will come up. But I think it's important to be able to see yourself in the stories that are told at the memorial. So you sign up, you put in who you are, you can send a picture in. And if you go to the memorial, anybody can search your name and your story and your time in service come up. And, you know, I was able to do that a couple of years ago. And when we went to visit the memorial, I had one of my children with me, and they were just so wowed by the fact that my story, my journey, a little bit of it was preserved at this memorial. So it's something that you can do. It's no cost to you to preserve these things. So I would encourage you to do it. I wanted to share, though, before we get to our next segment, a little bit of history about some of the women veteran trailblazers out there. Now, we've heard of the Deborah Sampson Act, but I wanted to tell you a little bit about Deborah Sampson, who was one of the first famous women veterans serving disguised as a man during the Revolutionary War because women were not allowed to enlist and serve. And she served under the alias of Robert Shurtleff. I almost think, like, who didn't know that was fake, right? But she enlisted in 1778, and she served without question until 1781 when she developed an illness which caused brain fever, and her deception was detected by a physician who was treating her. That almost sounds like one of my favorite Disney movies, Mulan, that story. So instead of disclosing her secret, the physician kept it quiet, and eventually was instructed to take a letter to General Washington, who gave her a private discharge and some money so she could return home. But I mean, the fact that she was so bound to serve that she served as a man, that's a trailblazer. And then we have Sarah Emma Edmonds, who is from Michigan, actually. She lived in Detroit, and she was one of the first to serve in the Civil War. She also disguised herself as a man and joined the U.S. Army so that she could do her duty to her country. She went under the name Frank Thompson, and she was in the 2nd Volunteers of the United States Army as a male nurse and also a Union spy. Great stories, great history, great trailblazers. Women serve, and they serve valiantly. So I'm so excited to talk about more of that today and talk with women veterans who are making a difference in our state. So you're not going to want to miss this, so stick around. We'll be right back on the Veterans Perspective. Welcome back to the Veterans Perspective. I am with Erica Hoover, the Women Veterans and Special Populations Coordinator with the Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency. We are welcoming her back to the show. She does amazing work and just so excited to have her back. Just a little bit about Erica. She served in the Navy, and we're going to talk a little bit more about some of that service and what she's done as we are celebrating women's history. Welcome back to the show, Erica.
Thank you, Director Adams. It's always great to be on the show with you.
It's great to have you. And so, you know, I'm so excited to have you back here and to really be able to talk about you. I know we talk about the programs and things that you do sometimes, but really we haven't really talked about who you are. And you've been serving in this particular role since 2020? End of 2020?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And so, but you've been at the MVAA since 2017, right?
That's right. I'm going on my 5th year.
Wow. Well, can you tell us a little bit about your service in the Navy? Because, you know, quite frankly, I was like, yeah, I'm not joining the Navy. I don't want to get on a boat. I don't swim very well. So tell us about your time in the Navy.
Yeah. So I was an aviation machine engine mechanic on the F-18. I worked on jet engines, fuel systems, and auxiliary systems. I served in Lemoore, California, from 2009 to 2013. Not the greatest place to be stationed in the world. But it was a lot of experience. My squadron maintained 108 jets, and a normal squadron would do like 10 jets. So I got a lot of experience out of that 4 years.
Well, you know, it's really great to be able to see the diversity of services, you know, in our agency as well as across the state. I think it's really a testament to, you know, how we're able to serve so adequately, because it's not like all Army or all Marines or all Air Force. You know, we have these different perspectives from the different services. So that's great to have you. You know, just looking at your history, I know you've dabbled in politics too a little bit. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I went to culinary school out of the Navy. I thought that was a good transition piece for me, and then realized I wanted to finish my degree and use my GI Bill. And after that, I actually got a job through our political science department. So I have a bachelor's in political science, and I worked for State Representative Alyssa Kenny Geyer in Oregon. Amazing experience. I was one of her policy advisors, and she really let you take the reins and kind of run with some bills. And I worked on some really amazing legislation that changed people's lives, and like in long-term care, for the Commission for the Blind, and a bunch of other environmental things. So I kind of had my hands in a whole bunch of things, and that was really exciting to be able to make a difference like that.
Well, you're changing lives here too in Michigan. I mean, you really put together the Michigan Women Veterans Coalition. And so can you tell our listeners what that is and what y'all do?
Yeah, so our coalition, we meet quarterly. We've been meeting a lot more right now because we're planning a really exciting event, but it consists of 22 seats, and that is from organizations across the entire state of Michigan. So it goes from our VAs, our Women Veteran Program, our veteran service organizations in the state, women veterans that wanted to be a part of it. We have just a broad and a wide range of women, and it doesn't have to be women only, but it's women advocates and women that have served, and veterans, women that serve or people that serve veterans. A lot of it is just communication that's been lacking as a statewide initiative. We, you know, the more we talk, the more we know about what's going on in each corner of the state, and how we can work together to make things better for women veterans. So it's been really rewarding to put that group together.
You know, we're talking about women. We're talking about women during Women's History Month. We're talking about women veterans. And, you know, then we talk about this position that was created for women veterans as a coordinator. Why do you think it's important to talk about women? I mean, I know that there are people out there who may, you know, think that, you know, well, we're all veterans, and we are, right? We all served, we all signed up, we all took the oath. But why do you think it's important that we elevate these?
It's really important because we are women, and we all served, and we all, you know, some of us did the same jobs as men, but we've experienced things differently in the military and in the VA. In our transitions, in our daily lives, the way that we handle the world and our families and everything. It's just women experience things different, and they're built to advocate or to work with women veterans. And so I feel it's really important that we do all work together and we do raise these issues up, because the more women that use the VA, the more women that run for office, the more women that do all of these things in our communities, it will make it better for our next generation coming up and folks that are currently using all these services.
I mean, I absolutely agree. I mean, women are the fastest growing part of the military right now. These issues are not going to go away if we don't fix them. And my hope is that, you know, there comes to a point someday where we don't even have to have a women veterans coordinator, because, you know, every woman veteran and every person going through the VA and any of those things that have to do with veterans are getting the same equal treatment. So that's the hope. The reality is that we have to keep knocking on that door. And so you talked about, you talked about like different areas of the military and how women were doing the same jobs as men. And then that you were a female aviation machinist, like how many other females were there?
Well, at many times I was the only a woman in my shop. And I was, my second year in, I had advanced enough with all my qualifications to be a shift supervisor. And I was, you know, doing like CDI work, which is quality assurance on the jobs that we were doing. There might've been two others. A lot of times they would get sent away, you know, to do like alternate duties or, you know, hazmat or barracks watch or, you know, something like that, which I always found really, really sad. Cause then it was hard because I had to blend in with all the guys. And then I always felt like I had to do extra work and work a lot harder and, you know, carry a toolbox. And, you know, I had a common thing where I would say, I don't need a man. And they all thought it was really funny, but I didn't want to be looked at as somebody that was weaker. So I always tried to, you know, do more, even when some of them couldn't do the job, you know, by themselves.
That's a really great first thing. It's a perspective that many women veterans dealt with as service members. I would just ask before we wrap up, what advice would you, maybe it was advice that was given to you, to women out there trying to find their way?
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know, finding your community, people that understand what you've been through is so important. And so that, you know, a lot of that is reaching out and you know, to local organizations or, you know, reaching out to MVAA to find out what's going on. Like, I think it's just really important that you find a community, whether or not you believe that you need it. I think everybody needs it. And once they find it, they realize that they've needed that.
Well, is there a way that women veterans in June?
Yeah, veterans in Lansing, June 10th and 11th. Save that date.
You have the save the dates. So if you want more information, give us a call at 1-800-MICHVET. That's 1-800-642-4838. Or you can visit our website at michigan.gov/MVAA. And apparently I'm going to be in the hot seat when we come back. So looking forward to that. We'll be right back on the Veterans Perspective.
Welcome back to the Veterans Perspective. I'm Erica Hoover. I'm the Women Veterans and Special Populations Coordinator with Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency. And I'm here with Director Zanetta Adams of the Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency. And a little bit about Director Adams. In 2006, after 8 years of service in the U.S. Army, National Guard and Reserve, Director Adams was medically discharged with honor. During her time in the military, Director Adams served as Joint Counter-Narcotics Task Force Agent for the National Guard. Prior to her gubernatorial appointment to the MVAA in June 2019, she was an attorney at Williams Hughes PLCC, assisting veterans with compensation and pension appeals. Welcome to your own show, Director Adams.
Thank you. Yeah, this is definitely a different place to be for sure.
I bet. Yeah, it's different for me as well. So we've known each other for a little while. You know, we met, I think, for the very first time when I was working for MVAA, and you were working on at Wink, the president of Wink. Do you remember when we met and what that was like?
Yeah, so we actually had this event in Muskegon. I think it was Women Veterans Day in Muskegon. They had named Women Veterans Day. I think they were the first city in the state to do that. April of probably 2018, I think it was. And at this event where women veterans came and they were honored and recognized. And it was just really a great event. And I do, after I had a conversation with you, that one that was profound to me was that you had never been in a room with that many women veterans before. And that was a comment that I've heard from multiple women as well. And it always surprises me. And so, yeah, I remember when we met and I thought, this is going to be a great, you know, great relationship here.
Yeah, it's true. I had never been in a room full of women veterans. As you know, we said earlier, it was the very first, I barely had seen any women when I was in the Navy. So I think that was really amazing. Like it really opened up my eyes to needs of women veterans in Michigan. Can you tell me a little bit about why you started WINC, what the need was, since we're talking about women veterans and needs in Michigan?
Yeah. So, WINC for All Women Veterans came about, and it was, it came about because, it was a women veterans retreat that kind of helped restart and kickstart my mental health recovery, I would say. I have been struggling. I was going to different organizations, events, trying to get back to a normalcy of not feeling depressed and isolated and in pain and things all the time. And I went to this woman's and I saw moms and wives and, along with amputees and people that were struggling and had more severe injuries than I thought I had. And they were thriving. And they were surviving. And so it really gave me the desire to want to have that more often, because it was a once or twice a year retreat. And it was like, then you're done. So I wanted to create this community of women veterans that could lean on each other, have meetups, have these different retreats, more year-round support for each other. And so in 2014, that's what I did, with a small board, I was able to create WINC, and it's still going today.
Yeah, that's amazing. I know that they're still doing really good work while you're here, and they're great partners. I guess we'll talk a little bit why the Army. Why did you choose the Army? And, what was your experience like? I know that, we talked about we have a lot in common as women that served in the military, but there are a lot of things that make us different. And, I'd love to hear a little bit about more what your experience was like.
So, I really enjoyed the Army as far as, the training and the being able to get in there. I've always been, I don't want to say I'm an outspoken person, but I'm one of those people that speaks up when I see things or I ask questions. And so I don't know if that made me friends or not. But what I will say is that, when I was called up on 2005, I was and it was just talk. And I would say, I've been asked that question, are you a military sexual trauma survivor? And I oftentimes will say no, but I endured some pretty intense sexual harassment because I wasn't following the norms of what the males thought I should be following, along with all of the offers and things that I received. So I would say that for that time, I think that I had a pretty okay experience in the Army. It wasn't until that piece that I felt isolated and alone, and then couple that with having an injury where I need to be deployable and I wasn't able to be deployable. And it was almost like, well, you're no use to us. Like I was, in essence, dropped like a bad habit, if you will. So, there's healing that had to come with as well, but I learned a lot. And I think that the Army gave me a lot of discipline and skills that I'm still utilizing today. So it was great. And I think my hope is that with all of the changes with the Deborah Sampson Act and all of these things that are happening, that the military is even better for women veterans today than it was then.
Yeah, I certainly hope so as well. Do you think if you had not been injured, would you have spent your career, a lifer?
I think I might have. I was actually in IRR when I was called up. So, maybe not. I think that after my interesting and seeing my friends come home, I actually had a desire to want to stay, but I couldn't because of my injury. So I think my injury actually and seeing my friends getting to that point actually made me question whether I wanted to go back or not. Time I was like, yep, I'm done with this. I've done my 6-8 years and then I'm done. But then after that, and being during a wartime, I really wanted to serve. So it's there's a balance there.
Yeah, for sure. And tell me, Director, you've shared your personal journey and your years. I know a lot of times, you know, on the veterans perspective, with our staff, with other folks, and I know it's really been inspiring people to, you know, utilize mental health care. And, you know, it's something that I think it's really important that we all talk about. What gives you the strength and the courage to talk about those things? I know it's really hard and, you know, it's really admirable. What does give you that strength?
Well, I appreciate that question. I definitely don't feel strong when I'm having those conversations. And I think, you know, being the first woman to serve in this position, being the first woman cabinet member, veteran and first female veteran in the history of the state, it makes me want to not share stories because I don't want to be seen as continues to push me to share and to be vulnerable and to share all of this stuff that every time I get on a call with you, it seems like I share. I've seen it change lives. I've seen the number of women and veterans in general who come up to me or who message us to say like, look, that happened to me, or I went through that. I understand, like, I didn't know anybody else was like me out there that stuff struggled that. And so that gives me hope that even though it's hard and it's tough and it's something that I cringe at having to do, it's something that is saving lives and helping people. So as long as I can do that every day, help someone, then I guess I'll have to get up, suck it up and drive on, right?
Yeah, no, I really appreciate this conversation and, you know, your leadership at the agency and with veterans in Michigan. And it's really been a pleasure interviewing you and getting to know you a little bit more. And I hope the folks listening also feel the same way. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. And thank you for giving me a break from not having to interview someone. I mean, taking the time to hear my story. I think it's important. And I think it's really important that our listeners know that I'm one of you. I've been through a lot. I've been through the VA system. I've been through challenges and I've been through triumphs. And so, you know, I have our best interest of our state veterans in mind whenever I make a decision. So thank you for interviewing me, Erica.
Thanks for having me.
You know, if you're struggling, please don't forget you can call the crisis line at 1-800-273-8255, press 1. When we come back, we'll be talking with Pazella Pazbonner from Homes for Heroic Veterans.
Welcome back to The Veterans Perspective, presented by the Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency. Now, your host, Director of the MVAA, Sonetta Adams.
Welcome back to The Veterans Perspective. Joining me as our next guest is Pazella Pazbonner. She served in the U.S. Army for over 16 years and is a proud mother of boy-girl twins. Just like me, we'll have to talk about that. Her son is also an Iraq War veteran. She is the founder Homes for Heroic Veterans, a nonprofit that provides community-based transitional housing for homeless veterans. Homes for Heroic Veterans is 2 years old and was born out of her adverse military experience. To date, the program has successfully transitioned 12 veterans to having their own housing, jobs, and connecting them with receiving their military benefits and health benefits. Homes for Heroic Veterans' motto is serving the forgotten veterans. Additionally, Macomb County has recognized Paz with the 2021 Macomb County Pat Daniels Veteran of the Year Award. Welcome to the show, Paz.
Thank you so much, Director Adams.
It's great to have you. It was great to meet you virtually a couple of months ago and we did the Wayne County Resource Fair. And so just to hear your story then, I think it's something that's worth sharing with this audience, really.
Well, thank you so much.
So, you know, we are talking about Women's History Month. And so, you know, I think it's important that we share the stories of women who are living history as well and making history as we speak. And so, you know, as I was, you know, talking with you, I noticed that you consider yourself a forgotten U.S. Army veteran. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Well, I consider myself a forgotten U.S. Army veteran because it took me over 37 years to receive medical benefits from the VA hospital. And the situation was when I went in, there was a clause in my contract, which unbeknownst to me, that if I didn't complete 2 years active duty, I couldn't be seen at the VA hospital. I was stationed in Germany. I had been there a year and a half. My grandmother had a stroke. I came back home and I was stationed in Michigan temporary for a few months. And the military said to me, you have two sisters to take care of your grandmother, get out or go back to Germany. Well, I'm not going to get out. My mom had just passed away. I mean, I'm not going to go back to Germany. So I decided to get out and I went directly into the reserves. Fast forward a few years, I started having issues with my joints from injuries I had in basic training and on active duty. And I tried to go to the VA and they kept telling me, no, no. They told me about this clause in my contract, which I didn't know anything about. And I felt if the military knew about that, they should have said, hey, stay in three more months so you can get your medical benefits. And they did not do that.
Wow. You know, unfortunately, your story, unfortunately, is not unique. And, you know, it's unfortunate as well that you weren't able to get connected to your benefits. I mean, I know so many people who've served who, you know, by the time you get injured or you're dealing with some hardship, you're just ready to get out. You're not even looking for some of those additional benefits and resources that are available to you while you're in. And so you're ready to sign the paper and walk away. So I definitely understand that.
Yeah, I just feel like there's so many things that they don't tell us about when we're about to get out. When you go to basic training, when you go and they inundate you with every single thing you need to know, where you need to be, when you need to do it. But when you get out, it's like you're forgotten. No one even says go to the VA. You know, they don't tell you anything. They just expect for you to come back home and, you know, act like nothing ever happened. And you know, for me, it didn't happen that way. Like I said, it took me 37 years to be seen at the VA hospital. In the midst of that, Social Security had to disable me and give me Medicaid and Medicare so that I could get my hips replaced. One of my hips was in pretty bad shape. I didn't know how long I was going to be able to have insurance. So as a result of that, I did a double hip replacement. I did it 60 days apart for fear that when my right hip got really bad, I may not have insurance. So let me just go ahead and get both of them done. That was a real hardship, you know, hardship for me. And still no one at the VA helped me. It wasn't until April of 2017 that I found a Facebook group called Vet to Vet. And there was a gentleman in there that, you know, I posed the question, why can't I go to the VA hospital? He said, you know what? That was a hardship. And the VA should know that. Let me help you. I don't know what he did. He got back with me 2 days later and told me to go down to the VA. Went down to the VA on a Friday and they said, you know, okay, everything's good. It's 4:00. We close at 4:30. Can you come back on Monday and get your ID? And I just felt like, you know, they're still treating me like I'm forgotten or I haven't served in the military. And, you know, that's what, after that, you know, that made me push forward to try to, I still was not service connected, you know, to try to get my service connected benefits. And still took me a few years longer to get that. I had to go before a judge, an appellate judge that said, well, the military should have disabled you a long time ago. And I started, you know, just thinking how many other veterans are going through what I'm going through and how many other veterans could even endure this long.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And that is, that's a story of several of our veterans, many mm-hmm. of our veterans here in the state. You know, I think, you know, just this question is for you dealing with veterans now who have gotten out probably in the last 10 years. Do you think that it's different? I mean, I know I hear stories of transitioning service members who hear about the VA now when they're getting out and who actually there are some of their TAPS folks help them to apply for their disability benefits now that they're getting out. Have you heard those stories of people who actually have been able to get that assistance now versus when you got out?
I do think that it's getting better. And I think that I think there's more word being spread out there. I hear it on the radio every morning about the Veterans Services, Macomb County Veterans Service. I live in Macomb and I hear that commercial 3 to 4 times a day in the morning before 9:00, where when I got, I never heard anything. I never saw anything in writing. I never heard anybody on the news say anything. So I will say that they are doing a lot better with spreading the word, you know, go to the VA. There's benefits there for you.
Well, and I think your story is important too for those individuals who may have been denied or who didn't know they had benefits so long ago to check it out because things have changed. And so I love that you shared that story. And I also wanted to talk to you a little bit about, you know, the story of Homes for Heroic Veterans. So I assume and know that probably came from your experience, but can you tell us a little bit about that and maybe how people can qualify to be a part of that?
Homes for Heroic Veterans, we provide non-congregate Again, transitional housing for veterans. Right now we have two homes and we work with veterans that are homeless. A lot of them come through shelters. They're referred by different case managers. SSVF is working with us directly. That's where we're getting most of our veterans from. But if they want to find us, they can go to homesforheroicveterans.com. That is our website. There is a place where you can leave a message, where you can get in touch with someone. We will get back in touch with you. And right now we do have about three openings. These would be for male veterans. Our future goal is to open up transitional housing for females. I was just in a meeting with an attorney this morning about some land that we have found that's close to our other properties. The properties we have are six blocks apart. Our goal is to build up the south end of Warren. That's our first goal because that's where our properties are. But we want to expand because, I mean, there's homeless veterans everywhere.
So, you know, that's a great program. I would ask you, is there a way that listeners can assist you in achieving your goals? Because homes for women veterans and their families is so important, it's so critical, and it's so necessary, not even just here, but all over the country. So how can people help?
They can help. Again, they can go to homesforheroicveterans.com. They can also email at homesforheroicveterans@gmail.com. They can also reach us at 586-757-2269. There is a way to donate on the site. There's a way to donate time. There's a way to donate finances, which at this time, this is what we're looking for, finances, because we need to build. With the climate on real estate right now, it's very hard to even try to get homes. So we're getting to the point where we think we're going to have to build.
Well, Paz, I want to thank you so much for your courage and for pushing forward with your VA benefits to make sure that you weren't continually forgotten. And I just want to let you know you're not forgotten by us.
And thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate you acknowledging the Macomb County Veteran of the Year. That was a history maker. I was the first female veteran to ever receive that award and the first female of color. So I am very appreciative to be recognized in that manner.
Well, thank you so much. And congratulations on that as well and making history. So, you know, I just want to remind everyone that you can find out more information about anything you heard on the show at 1-800-MISHVET. That's 1-800-642-4838. We also launched on a new website platform, so you can go check us out at michigan.gov/MVAA. As always, if you're struggling and need to talk with someone, call the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 or text 838-255 for assistance. Thank you all so much. Thank you to all of our guests and have a great week. See you next week on the Veterans Perspective.